Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. It's spring break season with plenty of all-inclusive deals inviting you to relax in some sunny, safe destination. There are educational and charitable vacations, extreme action packages, and for those seeking a different kind of thrill, drug tourism. Tours to Amsterdam, Indonesia, and Peru allow vacationers to indulge in substances illegal here in the U.S. Drugs and vice are big money makers for these countries. In Peru, drug tours may also be helping to preserve the rainforest. Christine Sismondo traveled to Peru to experience this growing industry for herself and wrote about it for the Smart Set. And a quick note first to parents and sensitive listeners. We are in no way endorsing using drugs, but we're going to hear a firsthand account of an experience in a place where use is legal and part of a long cultural tradition. So with that out of the way, hello, Christine.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. Really excited to talk to you about this. We know Amsterdam for its hash bars, Southeast Asia for various different kinds of drugs and vices, among other things. So what is it that's luring people to Peru?
Peru actually has more than just the ayahuasca, which I wrote about. Peru has a number of drugs that are illegal in other places that have been kept legal there for cultural reasons. So the first one would be coca tea, which is not really white powder cocaine or anything close to that, but it helps people adjust to the altitude. And they're under a fair bit of pressure to make that illegal from the United Nations. And the second one is a form of mescaline called San Pedro, which people in the Andes drink. It's a cactus that sort of melted down and turned into a tea. And the third is, of course, the ayahuasca, which is more common in the rainforest. And the indigenous people there drink that also sort of like a tea and experience a long, protracted high.
Well, tell us a little bit more about the history and the tradition of using ayahuasca.
I think that the thing that's sort of important to note about all of this isn't like a weekend party drug to the people who are using it. It's the guide that we had, we spent about a week with a guide in the rainforest, and his name was Oscar, and he was absolutely fantastic. He had grown up there. His uncle was a shaman. His father was a shaman. And he had, I think, taken ayahuasca four times in his life. They tend to do it during periods when you're either sort of mentally stressed or physically ill. And it's almost a diagnostic tool.
What do you mean a diagnostic tool? It just sort of points out what you need help with or what's wrong?
Exactly. The shaman uses it to try to identify what's wrong mm-hmm. with the person that he's helping to heal.
We're talking with Christine Sismondo about the growing trend of ayahuasca use in Peru, where it is legal and it's being sold as part of vacation packages for ecotourism companies there. And as far as drugs go, ayahuasca has not been a household name. You know, certainly it's not a street drug. But you're observing that things are changing. And how so, and why do you think that is?
It sort of hit the cultural consciousness. It's interesting because it was about 50 years ago that it first sort of became noticed by people like William Burroughs and Allen Ginsberg. And then more recently, it's having a bit of a, I don't know, I guess a renaissance. And I think it has mostly to do with the fact that it's become accessible, in that none of us are really up to going to the same extremes and lengths that somebody like William Burroughs would have gone to. He incidentally went there because he thought it might be a cure for his heroin addiction. But none of us are probably willing to go quite as far as he was, because he was going through sort of uncharted territories and trying to find shamans who would help him try this drug that really Westerners weren't commonly doing. So now, though, there are more well-traversed routes for people to go. The thing that I did was actually a package deal, and that's what made me interested in it. It came in my email inbox one day, and it was this offer to go and enjoy the nature reserve in the Tambopata at Rainforest Adventures. And you could sort of adjust the package to do whatever you wanted, wildlife spotting, more of a sort of a spa treatment. And one of the spa treatment packages was ayahuasca. And I actually found it kind of hilarious.
That is so funny. Sort of all-inclusive, you wear this bracelet and get all your drinks and meals free and a dose of ayahuasca.
I know. That's exactly it. I thought it was sort of funny that they were offering it in this way because I had read just a tiny bit about ayahuasca before, and what I'd read was almost horrific, you know, this sort of idea of purging, and I had read that people have fairly extreme bodily reactions to it. So that paradox sort of got me interested.
Well, what was it like for you, Christine?
You know, again, I wouldn't want to endorse it for a lot of people either, necessarily. It was a little scary at first, and we felt we were in extremely good hands where we were. But it was kind of, nonetheless, still a little bit terrifying, especially since a lot of people feel like they're dying when it first goes in.
And you did too, didn't you?
I did. I totally did.
You had the typical purge reaction. There's a lot of vomiting.
Yeah, not so much. Not as much as you hear. But I was checking my pulse before. And then when I did throw up, I was really relieved to do so because I felt like I was getting some of the poison out of my body.
But do you think you ever came to whatever state or, you know, place of diagnostic possibility that you were told could come out of this experience?
Well, the reports are really wide-ranging about what people experience. And some people say that they get nothing less than a full-on sort of religious experience with insights into the origin of the universe. I didn't have that or anything close to that. Other people say that they get insights into their primary relationships. I wouldn't say I necessarily had exactly that either. I think that a lot of what I felt was sort of actually things that you could figure out pretty easily on your own, but I did think I felt them kind of more profoundly, like, you know, you should try to be a better person. You should try to be more generous with people, those sorts of things. So they were actually kind of banalities, I would say, but I felt them very strongly.
Now, you talked about primary relationships. Your husband was also with you on this trip, I guess I can use that word,
yeah,
of various different sorts. What was the experience like for him?
Well, it was pretty hilarious. He had been sick the year before, and I had forgotten to mention that to the shaman. So that kind of added to my concern that this was a really, really stupid thing to have done when I was first doing it. But he was just sort of lying there, and I thought, oh, no, I've killed him. I've taken him into the jungle and killed him. And then the shaman asked if we wanted a second dose, and I said, no, 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 I'm great. And he said, yeah, I'll take a second dose. Anyhow, he had a good experience, but I would say he felt less of the sort of, oh, I should fix my life kind of things that I did. I also felt very strongly that that the stress that we all experience, it could be manageable, that I could feel in some way. That was probably the biggest thing that I took out of it, which was that bodily stress, I could probably work harder to make that a less terrible experience. And I felt like it was possible. And I've never really noticed that before.
Hmm. Now, this was put together by Rainforest Expeditions, this package.
That's right.
You're writing in that Peru is not simply taking money from tourists and investing it in conservation. So what are they trying to do? What about this was a rainforest or eco tour kind of enforcing experience for you?
Well, Rainforest Expeditions is basically almost 100% indigenous owned. There's a lease partnership for a short period of time with a company from Lima that helped them sort of get off the ground and figure out how to offer these sort of services. And ayahuasca is by no means the most popular service that they're offering. But the lease ends, and at some point it will go entirely back to the indigenous community. And what I think is really interesting about what they're doing there with the ayahuasca, with the nature tourism, with the animal spotting, all of it, is that they're making that land more valuable to preserve than to exploit. And as you probably know, the price of gold has made that area very volatile. There's concerns about mercury poisoning from the way that the gold is being extracted. And so the antidote to that is ecotourism. For all that it has its faults, and serious faults they are, at least that's something that provides an incentive to preserve the rainforest as opposed to just exploit it.
Christine Sismondo, an author who writes mostly about America's long relationship with alcohol. Her article about drug tourism in Peru appeared in the Smart Set. Christine, I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
And from druggy vacations to chilling booze. When Word of Mouth continues, we'll look into an emerging trend among cocktail enthusiasts, artisanal ice. You can chill on that until Word of Mouth returns right after the break.